This is Will's Band of the Week for July 12th, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with David from the Brooklyn, New York Bureau.
I'm here, I'm hot, I'm ready.
And the coronavirus is all over there, right? It's done? It's made its way through? Everything's back to normal?
No, nothing is normal, but and we definitely don't want to say anything is done. It's in abeyance.
Yeah.
It's in retreat.
Yeah, we interrupt this podcast to play the coronavirus jingle.
It's time for the very serious Corona Report. My Corona.
No, things are not normal. Actually, we were going to go to opening restaurants about a week ago, and the governor and the mayor both said, "You know what? We're not going to be doing that." And so what's happening now is that every restaurant in the city, as far as I can see, is building like a wooden fortress out in the street, out where you would normally park your car.
Yeah,
that is now prime territory, and they actually are required by law to put up 18 inches of wall around the space. People have gotten tickets for not putting up the proper barrier. You can't just like stick some cones out there and put some tables out and say, we're dining in the street.
Uh-huh.
You have to really be serious. So a lot of work for carpenters right now. People are out there just building like crazy and putting up these outdoor dining spaces. And actually, it's pretty lovely. It's probably what the streets should have been used for, you know, many years ago. But nobody, you know, instead they were all used for more parking. But now it's the thing. It's the only thing.
So they were going to open restaurants for some indoor dining, and now it's outdoor only?
There was supposed to be indoor dining on July 7th, but nope. Now I suspect not until maybe next summer.
Yeah, here they've done some of that here, too, with the outdoor dining spaces. So we've eaten outside a few times, felt reasonably safe, you know, with a breeze and people not close to us. And they opened the restaurants here to 50% capacity, but then they had a huge uptick, so then now they reduced it to 25%. So a lot of the restaurants are just like, well, it's not worth it. And no bars. No indoor bars. So
Right. We don't have indoor bars either. We have, if you want to take your drink down the street to the park, that's about it.
Did they relax the open intoxicants outside rule?
You know, I'm not sure it's relaxed.
Seems like they just don't enforce it, right?
it may be not enforced currently, yeah. I mean, and it may be selectively enforced, you know, so who knows. But, I don't really know. I think it's probably still technically illegal to drink on the street, but there's a lot of it going on.
Yeah. I remember when the whole thing first started and they were talking about essential businesses and everybody was laughing because liquor stores were essential businesses.
And in Colorado, pot stores were essential businesses.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I think we talked about that maybe back in March. Yeah. Well, I don't have a live report. I have a media report. You know, like I think Chris has established that we can talk about any media, even if it's not music related. So, and this relates to New York City. Have you seen the documentary on Netflix called Lenox Hill?
I have not.
So it's just a documentary about a hospital in New York City called Lenox Hill Hospital, and it's pretty good. If you ever thought you would want to watch a TV show that has brain surgery suspense, this has it. So they have two brain surgeon guys, and then they have an OBGYN doctor and an emergency room doctor, and they kind of follow the goings-on at the hospital. And it's pretty cool. And at the end, they did, I think they did 8 regular episodes. And then when the COVID thing hit, they did a special COVID episode.
Oh, so they're very up to date.
Right. So that started in March, and I think it went through about maybe late April. So, you know, you kind of get to know the doctors and the characters in the show, and then they update with these same people reacting to the COVID situation. So it's pretty cool. It's really, really well done. So I recommend it.
So that's a series.
Yep. A docu-series.
Docu-series, Lenox Hill. Okay.
Yep. Check it out. No rock and roll.
I have no recommendations outside of albums.
I think they played a good... it's always interesting, isn't it, what music is used in movie productions. I'm pretty sure one of the episodes ended with a Radiohead song, and it was very effective. Might be the last one. So that's cool. What else do we have?
My wife was watching a series where the both the theme song and the music in several episodes was Supion Stevens. Now I can't remember what... It's a brand new series. I can't remember what series it was.
Hmm.
Very recent. Anyway, the music was great.
Cool. Well, we have many good upcoming releases to talk about in the coming weeks.
So many.
Don't we? I mean, it's pretty... There are some like super favorites, like in the next one that just came out and 2 more that are coming out, you know, that have been on people's top 10 lists in the past. So pretty cool, pretty exciting. And well, today we have a few things to talk about. We have some indie rock veterans, Cloud Nothings. They're definitely indie rock veterans by now, right?
Absolutely.
So what do they have? Maybe about 5 albums or so? Seems like something
this
like that.
Might be the 5th full length, yeah.
And they did some sort of experimental thing a couple months ago, I think. I can't remember if that was even called Cloud Nothings, but it was Dylan Baldy is the guy, the like the lead yes. guy, singer, guitar player. But this new one, they recorded it during the whole COVID situation, and they were never together. And so what I read is they emailed files back and forth to each other, right?
Yeah, postal. When it here's what it says on Bandcamp. When it sunk in that there might not be any live shows happening for the foreseeable future, the members of Cloud Nothings began to work on what would become the Black Hole Understands. About a month into quarantine, Dylan Baldy and Jason Gerrich started sending files back and forth with guitars, bass, and vocals for the new songs being tracked in Philly, while drums and mixing happened in Cleveland. This is
yeah.
They explain that. Other bands may have done this in the past, but this is brand new for them. Well, it seems to have worked out pretty well, I got to say.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because I think we talked about this before that there are some bands that have done like a group video over Zoom or something similar and like actually jammed in a way that actually sounded coherent. And I thought, how do they keep everything in sync? You know, and I guess with a good pair of headphones and if they don't have too much like latency in the signal, then maybe it works. But when I first put this on, I thought, I don't know if you thought this, the very first track, something seems like just a little bit off with the drums. Like they don't match everything perfectly. And it sounds like, and maybe this is just because I was sort of already wondering how well it would all sync together. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of it sounds completely like a real band. The other thing I read is that Dylan Baldy used GarageBand presets for amp sounds. So he's just plugging into a computer and it actually sounds like his rockin' guitar usually sounds. So that's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't
well,
think he...
Can I ask you, as a musician, if you're tracking everything except the drums and then you're sending the file away for drums... I mean, you must be using something while you're recording, right? I mean, do you have like a yeah. click track or something that you use, and then they take that out? Or?
Yeah, I think you would have to have a click track if you're not recording the drums first. Something to keep it in sync. And then, you know, that some drummers are really good at playing to click tracks, and some aren't. They have to just play, you know, for themselves. So different methods. But that must be what they did. It sort of implies that, doesn't it? Anyway.
Because, yeah, otherwise I don't know how you would be able to keep time.
Well, we've done a lot of talking without playing a track. And so let's play a track. The Black Hole Understands is the name of the album. And I think it's Bandcamp only, so you might have to actually put up some money to get this, but it's worth it. So
yes, I acquired the files thanks to the generosity of a friend. that would be you.
Yes.
But as far as I know, there's no other place to get it. So yes, this is your opportunity to contribute something to the band. You out there.
Why don't we start with number two? The Sound of Everyone. Cloud Nothings. So that didn't sound like a hack job of a recording, did it?
No, not at all.
And I would say that the quality of the whole thing is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I was not a huge Cloud Nothing fan of the earlier stuff, and I put this on, I'm just absolutely taken over. They describe it as a set of streamlined summer pop songs, which, I mean, for a serious kind of very post-punk, you know, semi-experimental kind of band, these are summer pop songs. For someone else, they might not be, but for them, I think it's very much a change of pace.
Yeah, one notable thing is with his vocals, he's not doing that loud, growly, semi-scream, semi-growl that he sometimes does. He's more into just the straight melodic vocal mode, which I think they did some on their earlier first or second album, maybe. And then they kind of gradually went to sort of a harder sound. This is back to the poppier sound. Really good.
Yeah, definitely. And very hooky. I mean, every song really kind of grabs you. It's really hard for me to pick a favorite because I started making a list of, you know, what I like, and pretty much everything except maybe one or two songs is top notch.
Well, the time has come to make a choice.
How about the title? Number 10. Pretty good.
The Black Hole Understands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cloud Nothings. The black hole understands. Yeah, you could pick any of a number of these. Like you said, I agree with you. Just about all of it's pretty solid. And great job on the recording, too. So I think a fun one to play would be the instrumental track, number 5. Mm-hmm. It's got some rockin' bass, and it's just kind of cool. So let's play that one, Tall Gray Structure. I would describe that as rockin'.
Yeah, definitely.
That's basically the extent to which I can review music with verbally is just either it's rockin' or it isn't. So that's a yes. That's a thumbs up on the rockin'. So good job, Cloud Nothings. And I hope they've been really creative with their marketing. You can do a subscription to Cloud Nothings. And you can get merch from Bandcamp, and you can get this new album and all the older stuff. A bunch of live recordings they posted up there. One is from
that they have a series. I think I counted like 22 or something like that of live concerts that each one has its own album, basically.
Yeah, one of them is live at Bell's Brewery in Kalamazoo, and I've been to Bell's Brewery in Kalamazoo. I was actually there one time when they had a band playing, but the room where the bands play is in the back. So I think I just peeked in there. It looked like a pretty decent rock and roll room. But yeah, pretty cool. Cleveland, Ohio is where they're from, by the way.
Great fan service there. Yes. Well, originally from Cleveland, and I guess some are still in Cleveland, but others are quarantining in Philly.
Philadelphia, yeah.
So they're also part of that Philly rock scene that we know so well.
Yeah, that's a good rock scene, isn't it? Like we do tend, I mean, we probably talk about Melbourne bands more than any other city, and New York, but beyond those two, Philadelphia is really really doing a good job with the indie rock.
Yes.
Well, are we going on to the next musician now?
Okay.
We're giving thumbs up to Cloud Nothings.
Yes.
And let's talk about Phoebe Bridgers. You know what's interesting about Phoebe Bridgers?
Yes.
She's been like number one indie rock collaborator over the last couple of years, right?
I was going to say, has anyone been involved in so many high-profile projects in so short a time?
I not that I can think of. Maybe Dave Grohl. Nice. She's trying to be the next Dave Grohl.
Yes. I guess, but that's only two bands, right?
What's the What's the band with Lucy Dacus and...
So she's in Boy Genius with Lucy Dacus and Julian Baker, and they have one EP out, and they also toured as a group. And she's in Better Oblivion Community Center with Connor Oberst, and they have one album out, and they also toured.
Yep.
And she has two solo albums out. And she's only been around for a couple of years, really.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good start to the indie rock career. Hopefully it won't be killed by COVID. But I don't think so, because, you know, this is one of those anticipated albums, and I think people are really liking it a lot. So I don't think it's letting people down. It's interesting to me listening to it when I think about, I feel about it differently. I think I like it more because of the, when I associate it with her Connor Oberst collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's really well recorded and really, it's a solid. We should play some of it. I was kind of listening to this pretty casually and, you know, not sure how much I was going to listen to it more. And then you recommended it. So, you are now the featured speaker on Phoebe Bridgers.
Okay. Well, why don't we just start in with, what number is this? 6, I think, gives you a good idea of what it sounds like.
That'd be Chinese Satellite.
Right.
I've been running around in circles, pretending to be myself. Why would somebody do this on purpose when they could do something else? Drowning out the morning birds with the same 3 songs over and over. I wish I wrote it, but I didn't, so I learned the words. Hum along till the feeling's gone forever. Took a 2-hour to see the stars, but they weren't out tonight, so I wished hard on a Chinese satellite. I want to believe. Instead I look at the sky and I feel nothing. You know I hate to be alone. I want to be wrong. You were screaming at the evening.
Phoebe Bridgers, the album is called Punisher, and yeah, that's a good representation, and it's great how it builds.
It's very hushed, it's very melancholy, and you know, every once in a while it breaks out, and it's very, very intense. A lot of really intense songs, and more intense the more you study the lyrics.
Yeah, which I didn't quite get around to in typical fashion for me.
I got that.
So she's based in Los Angeles. So I didn't read whether she moved there from somewhere else for indie rock stardom. But
it's basically her home ground, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I wonder if we're now experiencing the last crop of albums that were recorded under ideal circumstances.
Right.
I mean, Nothing's obviously that is past that limit.
Right.
This one obviously was produced in a studio somewhere.
Right, definitely.
But when it comes to the next few releases, I don't know. I don't know what those are.
Yeah.
And I don't know what comes after that.
I could see studios kind of working out okay if they do a good job of cleaning, and you know, you've got somebody in the control room, somebody in a different room playing their instrument or whatever, and you could probably space out. But you know, as far as bands practicing together, I think that's still an issue. It's a smaller group, but like none of my old guy bands have gotten together at all since this started, because you know, you've got people in a usually in a pretty small space, and singing is very bad because you know the singer's going to spread their breath everywhere. So yeah, it's hard. Yeah, we'll see.
Nobody's been tested, so you can't. Ideally, right. You want to have everybody tested and then bring them together.
Right. Yep. Well, let's play some more of this album. I think the title track is really good. Let's play that one, number 4, Punisher.
And the speed kicks in, I go to the store for nothing.
Title track, Punisher.
So it's a song about Elliot Smith.
I didn't know that.
I think I probably had to read to realize that, but now that I look at the lyrics, it becomes clear. So we also had a discussion on a previous podcast of the term Punisher, which I was not aware of.
Right.
Which apparently means a really zealous fan who won't leave you alone.
Yeah, which does not describe us, right?
Not in the least.
No, we leave people alone. I personally don't feel like we've been obnoxious to anybody. Like, I guess I'm talking specifically about when we all went out to Austin. And we tried to talk to some bands and had fun with it. But I hopefully none of them were saying, God, those old guys, they were really annoying. I couldn't get rid of them.
Right.
We're hoping that.
We're hoping that. But, you know, Jeremiah talked to everybody, so.
Yeah.
I think he established a lot of relationships.
Yep.
I think that's good.
Well.
Anyway, I can't say anything bad about someone that, you know, feels that way about Elliot Smith. It's just, you know, kind of a religious thing for me. But leaving that aside, you know, still a good song. It's still a great record.
Yeah, I like the whole mood of that song, even not knowing what it was about. So, time for another one. Back to you.
Which one am I going to pick? I kind of like I See You.
All right, that's a deep cut. That's number 9.
Yeah.
Trying to
That's Phoebe Bridgers, and the album is Punisher.
You have a little of the more rockin' side.
Yep.
It's not all quiet and ethereal.
Right. It has some of the rock, and has some that are a little more kind of straightforward, melodic, and some others that are more just a little more abstract. And pretty good mix, I would say.
Yes, and it builds to a song at the end, which is kind of about the end of the world. And, that's definitely a way to close out.
Yeah. Make the album like it might be your last, right? The end is the end.
Like it might be the last.
Right. Yep. Well, hopefully not.
So far.
Yep. She's still very young. I just, in my music journalism, I just determined that she was born in 1994, in August of 94. So she's 25.
Right.
So,
by snail mail standards, she's middle-aged.
Right.
By normal standards, right. She's young.
Right. All right. Do we do justice to Phoebe Bridgers?
I think so. I think we're two for two.
All right.
Now we have a real challenge, though.
We might not be three for three after this one. We're going to find out. So I've been listening to this band from Sydney, Australia, just a few blocks up from Nicholas.
Oh, that explains why I'm ambivalent about them, because they're not from Melbourne.
No, they are from Sydney.
Oh,
so they have, you know, to get to Nicholas's backyard is just a little bit longer. You just follow the Australian coast, and eventually you hit,
I guess,
Nicholas's
I guess
backyard.
That's true, but you know, it's just a whole different culture.
Yeah,
it's not Melbourne.
True,
is what I'm saying.
Right. Well, to me, they sound Australian, nevertheless, and they sound kind of thrashy. So. The band is Sashay, and the album is called Nets. And I'm going to pick a track. We've got 12 songs on this album, and I'm going to go all the way to number 10, which is called D-Link.
Yes.
Sashay. I call a band Jangle Thrash a few weeks ago?
I think you did a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, I think this one's kind of Jangle Thrash, too.
Might have been, was that Rolling Blackouts or no? I don't remember who it was.
That wouldn't have been Rolling Blackouts because they're not Thrash. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. That's Sashay. It It's a sampling of sachet.
I like that one. You stole my pick.
Maybe you only had one pick. So the preliminary review was that it was going to be a hard sell for you. So then we might have to have a brawl of some sort. So
I guess what I mean is I wasn't knocked over.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike when I put on the Cloud Nothings album and I just was amazed and couldn't get enough of it. You know, this one, I played it a couple times, but it's not doing anything that great for me.
It did slowly kind of edge its way up for me. It was one of those that it's been out for a couple months now, maybe 3 months or so. And I couldn't delete it from my current playlist. It just wanted to stay there. So I think it kind of made a gradual rise. To now, it's basically, you know, some level of indie rock stardom, because we're talking about them, right?
Well, maybe I should give them more of a chance, because I've had a recent experience. You know, when I first listened to Second Grade, I liked it just fine. But as I played it more and more, it's kind of, you know, worked its way very swiftly up the ladder. And now it's like, this is my favorite band of the year. I mean, they're incredible.
Yeah.
And I would, that's not where I was to begin with at all.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
I wouldn't,
I don't know.
I wouldn't say this one would reach those heights, but it definitely, it's got some cool, just interesting, guitar work, especially, I think. And, you know, drums and rhythms that are cool. And well, I stole your pick. Did you have a backup?
I think I'm going to go with Sand, which is, what is that? Number 5?
Sand is number 7.
7, sorry.
They did the switch up in the middle of the song there. Went from atmospheric thing to a fuzzy pop thing.
Hard rocking thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing no one can ever accuse you of is going with the trendy, popular thing with this band, because they are as obscure as you can get. Spotify tells me they have 700 monthly listeners, which is pretty much as low as you can go and still be on Spotify.
Yeah,
so we're catching them at the early end.
Yeah, we got to buy sachet stock right now.
Definitely.
It's time to buy. Band on the Rise. Well, the album is called Nets, and I think the title track is a good one. Let's play that, number 5.
Call
There you go. Sachet.
Very nice.
The album is Nets. And
I think I might be partly converted on this.
All right, good. We're heading in the right direction. That's a fun one. So, well, no Melbourne this week, but we came, you know, relatively close by world standards.
I was going to suggest that if these guys really want to take off, there's only one thing they have to do.
That's true.
Move up the road to Melbourne.
Yep. I wonder if bands do that. They probably would, right? There must be a lot of bands that move there for indie rock stardom.
Well, I don't know if anyone's moving there from Sydney, but I would say if you're an Adelaide band or a Perth band or, I don't know, an Alice Springs band. I'm just taking things at random off the map.
Right.
Any of those would be a move up if you go move to Melbourne.
Yeah.
Now, Sydney, you know, it's kind of like Philly versus Brooklyn or Madison versus Chicago or, you know, it could go either way, but
yeah, there's a big enough it's interesting, isn't it, that we hear about so many bands from Melbourne, but Sydney is a really big city. You know, you'd think they'd have quite a music scene there, but just not quite as much as not quite a match for Melbourne, I think.
No.
Not having Nicholas there is probably that's the thing that separates them.
That could be. I mean, maybe Sydney is like the I don't know, the LA. No, that doesn't work because there are a lot of LA artists.
Right.
Maybe it's the Washington DC, you know? You don't hear too many DC bands.
Right.
Are there any DC bands anymore? Other than Fugazi?
Priests is the last one I can remember.
Oh yeah, Priests are DC.
Yeah. And there was that whole nineties kind of punky, what do you describe that? Well, they have the hardcore scene,
hardcore.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, Chris would tell us all about this. But he's not here. You could have been on, Chris, and you could have been right here. Right now is when you'd be talking all about the DC hardcore scene and what evolved from that and all that stuff. But well, that's our three bands. And I'm going to declare...
And that's our Make Fun of Chris section.
Right, you got to have that. You know, probably... Let me do one more thing here. If you're going to make fun of Chris, you probably should have this too. Right?
That's true.
I mean, it's either Chris's joke or joking about Chris. Either of those deserve that.
Right.
That sound effect, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, we kind of didn't play the any of our fun jingles. So at least we got to that one. We went straight to the music, but still, I think well over $0. We're in like the 40 to 50 cent range, I think, at least. That's how I'm feeling about it.
Right. I was going to say 25, 30, but yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people could differ. To one person, it could be worth like 40 cents. There might be someone who likes so much it's like worth $3. You know, I think that's possible.
Right.
At least theoretically possible.
Right.
So,
And if it is worth that to you, then you should go immediately to our Patreon and shovel that money in there.
The Patreon that doesn't exist.
The non-existent Patreon.
I checked, though, and I noticed that you've been putting some stuff up on the Instagram. So that's good. So I'm still like kind of a Instagram, what's the word? I just don't know what I'm doing on there. So
I've been trying to, keep track. Well, yeah, I mean, there was a news announcement. What am I... My God, we had a news flash, and I didn't even realize it.
What was that?
Allison Crutchfield got married.
Oh, right, right.
And she got married to Mike Kroll, who we featured on the show as well, I believe.
Another indie rocker.
That's right.
Right. Right.
That's right. It was an incestuous, within indie rock relationship.
Right. Yeah.
It's like her sisters.
There was another thing that I didn't do sufficient music journalism on. But there was an update. Yeah, we should have had Chris for this one, too. There was an update on that Lady A situation, where that country band...
Apparently Lady A is not going to sit tight with this situation.
Right. So it's weird on many levels. But so Lady Antebellum said, okay, we're going to be Lady A. They should have known there was already a Lady A, but whether they did or not, who knows?
Right, it would have taken 5 minutes on Google to figure that out.
But then the real Lady A, who, as far as I know, is pretty obscure, you know, they couldn't make a deal, right? So now Lady Antebellum is suing the original Lady A to say, we want to get your name and use it. So, but apparently there were negotiations, and the report I read was that Lady A asked for $10 million, I think it was. And it's like, you know, where do you come up with that?
Well, it's a good starting point, you know, but then you negotiate from there. I don't know.
I mean,
it does seem a little excessive considering that none of us had, as far as I know, had heard of Lady A before.
Wouldn't the maximum amount you could ask for be all the money that you would ever make in your life using that name? So I don't know where you get the argument for the $10 million. But then she said, I was going to give half of it away to good causes. So I don't know. I feel like I haven't researched it enough to, you know, to like scoff at either side as much as I am, you know, inclined to, because there's probably maybe more to the story on both sides.
You know, it's not as though they had taken the name of someone that, you know, was really well known, like, say, I don't know, Viagra Boys or someone like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been great if they said they were going to change the name to Viagra Boys. Yeah.
But wait, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, Alex G. worked his deal out, right? But it only took a few years, so.
Yeah, I think he probably just ran the other Alex G. into the ground.
Yeah.
She said, you know what, my career is just not going anywhere, and you know, I respect you so much as an artist that I'm just going to take whatever you give me and make a deal. I don't know.
Maybe he finally paid the $10 million she was demanding. That could have been what finally solved it.
Or the 10, whatever it was.
Right. It's like $150 is probably...
$50 and a free copy of every future record that he makes.
That'd be the indie rock way to settle something like this, right? Okay.
Or just, you know, let her take a new name and, you know, open for him at his next show, if there ever is one.
Yeah.
That would be a nice
bad
thing.
Deal. Right. Right. That's how you come together. That's probably what... Maybe that's what Lady A wanted to do, is open for Lady Antebellum. I have no idea if they're the same music style or not, but
well, but that, I guess that's it for music journalism.
Yep, that's all.
I'm sure there are other things happening, but we're just not aware.
Right. We'll keep. Maybe we'll do better research for next week. We know we have one band lined up for next week for sure. Beyond that, we'll come up with something.
But the cool thing about the Alison Crutchfield wedding, also, aside from the fact that it was Alison Crutchfield's wedding, which is pretty cool to begin with, mm-hmm. let's face it, is that it was at Sun Studios.
Oh, I think I read
original,
that.
Where Elvis and Johnny Cash and, you know.
In Memphis?
Jerry Lee Lewis all recorded. Yep.
Yeah. I've never been to Memphis. You ever been there?
No, I haven't. But that is pretty much the premier tourist attraction right there, other than Graceland.
I've been to Nashville once, but not Memphis. Well, there are places to go, so maybe someday.
Yes.
Well, I guess it's time to sign off. The goal is to sign off before people delete the file, so we better quickly do that before it degenerates into just so terrible that we get deserted. So let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.